My guest at this time is California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock. He represents the Golden State's 4th Congressional District. He was reluctant to support the American Health Care Act until some changes were made to the bill in the past few days. He joins me now to discuss his process in weighing through this important legislation as Republicans finally have the opportunity to make major changes and really overhaul the Affordable Care Act. And Congressman, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
What were your original reservations about this bill, and why were you initially reluctant to support it?
Well, the biggest problem is that they're using this convoluted process called reconciliation that doesn't allow them to repeal the entire act, doesn't allow them to replace the entire act, and requires a lot of additional administrative regulations, which are going to be restricted by what the most liberal court in the country allows them to do, and by follow-up legislation whose future in the Senate is highly dubious. So that's the first problem, and that was an argument I raised from the outset and just was not successful in pressing it. So now we have this reconciliation bill, and we have to ask ourselves, does that give us a better system? If that's all we get, is that going to give us a better system than the one we have right now? And it lacks a lot of the things I'd like to see. It lacks the freedom to, for consumers to shop across state lines, for example. If you can find a better policy in another state at a lower price, you ought to be able to purchase that policy. This doesn't extend you that right. It maintains a lot of the provisions that Obamacare that's caused our rates to increase. So it's far from perfect, but it does move us in the right direction, and I am satisfied that overall it does give us a better system than the one we've got right now. You know, it ends the individual mandate that forces people to buy products they don't want. It ends the employer mandate that has trapped a lot of low-income workers in part-time jobs. It begins to restore consumers' freedom of choice, which I think is the best guarantee of quality and value in any market. It allows people to meet more of their health care needs with pre-tax dollars. It relieves the premium base of the enormous costs of pre-existing conditions by moving those expenses to a block-granted assigned risk pool. So, you know, for all of those reasons, it's certainly not a perfect plan, not by a long shot, but I think it's an improvement over what we have.
I want to get to the changes that you helped to make to this bill in just a moment. But getting back to your original point about the rollout of the original American Health Care Act, when it comes to pursuing reconciliation rather than pursuing other market-based reforms, perhaps insurance regulation reform as well, in a broader version, do you believe that that was an error on the part of leadership, or do you blame Democratic obstruction for that, or is it both?
Well, both. Leadership chose that path precisely because of Democratic obstruction in the Senate. The reconciliation process allows us to bypass that 60-vote cloture threshold and pass the bill with a simple 51 votes. That was the purpose of that. My point is, if we put together a comprehensive bill that did exactly what needed to be done, removed all of Obamacare, did a nice, clean replacement plan that gets everything that we've been talking about for 8 years, if we pass that over to the Senate, the House having passed it, the Senate Republicans are clamoring to pass it, the president's calling for it, and the Obamacare system is collapsing on people, I think the pressure on those 8 Democratic holdouts would have been irresistible, particularly if Mitch McConnell said, you know, this time you want to filibuster this one, you're going to have to go down there and actually filibuster it. You're going to have to stand by your desks and talk until you drop. The record is 58 days. Good luck breaking that. And when you're done, we're all going to vote. I think we would have had that bill to the president in a couple of months. But anyway, those are arguments I made months ago and lost months ago. We now have this bill in front of us, and I think it more than merits an aye vote.
Sir, you took to the floor of the House of Representatives on Tuesday to explain why you've decided to support the bill with the changes that were made. I just want to read 2 paragraphs from that statement. The fact that many low-income families could no longer afford basic health care is what produced Obamacare. When fully implemented, our reforms will correct the government mandates that trapped people in restricted markets that forced health care out of reach. But until then, the CBO warns that a 64-year-old, for example, earning $26,500 will see her out-of-pocket health costs balloon from $1,700 to $14,600 per year. This is neither morally defensible nor politically sustainable. The Budget Committee adopted my motion on a bipartisan vote to ask the House to correct this inequity by adjusting the tax credits to assure that health plans are within the financial reach of every family. And then you went on to thank the leadership for adding that $75 billion worth for that purpose. Oh, why was that the linchpin for you, and how confident are you that that $75 billion will make it so that people who want to buy health coverage actually can?
You know, that $75 billion should be sufficient to provide that 64-year-old with tax credits that will allow them to continue to obtain a basic policy for what they're paying right now. I'm fairly confident of that. That is an important matter simply because in order for this thing to stick, the vast, vast majority of Americans have got to see an improvement in their choice of health care, in the options that are available to them, in the services that are accessible to them, and the costs that they incur. You could not sustain this bill with in a situation where people are seeing their health costs suddenly septuple.
Well, that certainly is a huge jump if, in fact, that were to take place. So this helps to offset that. A couple of questions in response, though. First of all, some folks see these tax credits as another form of an entitlement rather than the subsidies, and making them bigger makes it a bigger entitlement. What's your response to that?
Well, there is some truth to that. The flip side of that, though, is that we are pursuing policies that we're quite confident are going to rapidly expand the economy. People are going to see their incomes rise as a result of those policies. As a result of this and the follow-up health care bills that we envision, health costs should be coming down. I mean, even the Congressional Budget Office, just with this reconciliation bill alone, is estimating that within 2 years, they'll go up first, but then within 2 years, health costs will start coming down as competition kicks in, and you have companies tripping over each other to provide you a better service at a lower cost. That's the market that we're getting at. So as time goes on, people will be earning more. They'll be paying less for their health care, and the importance of these tax credits will naturally recede. But we have to have a bridge to get from here to there. And as I said, if these reforms are going to stick, we can't have a lot of people who feel that they've been badly harmed by this new policy.
Sir, you mentioned before that one of your major criteria, and it's perfectly understandable, for whether or not you could support this legislation is if this is the only thing that passed, if we never get to phase three, for example, as the speaker has mentioned, will this make major improvements? I know one of the concerns, perhaps you had this concern as well, I know others who are still trying to decide what to do about this vote, are wondering if this bill alone will ultimately bring down costs in a substantive way, as of course has been one of the big promises over the past 7 years, if you ever got to this point. So do you think that this legislation alone will do that?
I do, and the Congressional Budget Office confirms that after the initial phase in, what they do believe is a lot of people are going to leave the health care system when it's enacted because they'll no longer be forced to purchase plans. When you hear millions and millions of people lose their health care, well, that's all based on the premise that the only reason they're buying Obamacare plans is that they're being forced to buy those plans. That tells you how they view the value of these plans. You know, people will buy plans when they see value in those plans. So a lot of that is simply an indictment of the Obamacare system. But once you get past that transitional period of 2 years, the Congressional Budget Office says, yeah, we see these costs now going down.
Last question real quick. I know your time is valuable, sir. The White House has said today there is no plan B. This is plan A. So is this, as you see it, the one opportunity Republicans have to do something about it in this Congress? Or if for any reason the leadership can't find the votes, that there will be an effort to go back and perhaps make changes and try it again?
Well, failure will certainly be a major setback, not only for health care reform, but for the rest of the Trump agenda. And I just can't conceive that it's actually going to fail. I mean, I know it's not perfect, but I remind people, our system of government was not designed to draft perfect legislation. only I can do that, and I've never been able to get anybody else to agree to it. So it's all a compromise. But as Benjamin Franklin said in the Constitutional Convention, we all have to doubt a little of our own infallibility. When you pull together a group of people to benefit from their combined wisdom, unfortunately, you're also going to get their combined follies and prejudices and misjudgments. You can't ever get a perfect product out of this process. What you can get is a product that is the most acceptable that moves us forward. And I think that, and as Franklin said at the Constitutional Convention, this isn't the Constitution I would have drafted from scratch. I'm not sure I would ever approve the Constitution, except I think that this is a very good thing, and we'd better get it while we can.
Well, a momentous day coming on Thursday. Congressman, very good of you to join us and explain your process in evaluating this legislation. Thank you, sir, very much.
It's my pleasure, Greg. Thanks for having me.
As always, sir. California Republican Congressman Tom McClintock represents his state's 4th Congressional District. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.